You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, this is Ed Stetzer here on the New Churches Podcast. So the following episode was actually recorded with Clint Clifton before his passing. And if you're not aware of Clint's life ministry and his untimely death, I want to encourage you to listen to the prior episode. We did kind of a memorial episode. But Clint's passion for church planting and developing leaders led him to sharing that wisdom through mentoring, speaking, writing, and podcasting. And we know we actually talked about this, and we were like, well, what would Clint want? And we know he'd want this episode shared with our New Churches audience. So again, if you'd like to honor Clint's legacy, the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund has actually been created in his memory to generously fund church planters and remove barriers to pursuing God's call on their lives. To donate to the Clint Clifton Global Church Planting Fund, visit Dumfries. Pillar is like the pillar, pillar in a building, and it's Dumfries, DumFries.com. That's the church that he planted and planted many churches out of. PillarDumfries.com/Clint. That's PillarDumfries.com/Clint. And of course, you can use the link in the show notes as well. So listen to this episode, knowing that our friend finished his earthly race and really wanted to make much of Jesus through church planting and encourage you. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and today we're talking about something that's completely irrelevant to most church planters, or at least you're going to think it is. Executive leadership in new churches. And you're immediately like tuning out. You probably didn't even click on the episode because you're like, that has nothing to do with church planting.
You need a guy riding shotgun with you, and it's important for you to listen, because whether you pay that guy or not, you need this role. Don't think of it as executive pastor. That's the fancy new word that everybody titles everything, which is very confusing, but think of it as a guy riding shotgun.
Todd, you're like one of those caged up bulldogs. You just can't wait to talk. You can't wait to get your wisdom in there, man. But that guy who just dropped that wisdom bomb, that's Todd Adkins, and he works at Lifeway. He's a Bible salesman, among other things. And he's done a lot of great stuff, specifically in the area of leadership development. And he's a constant contributor to the New Churches Podcast, and we're real thankful for him. But we've got a new guest too, Jamie Caldwell. Jamie is a church planter, and he's the pastor of South Shore Church, a church that he planted in Annapolis, Maryland. He works with a whole bunch of young midshipmen from the Naval Academy, which is why he and I have crossed paths. We're both working in military ministry in some regard, and he's a great church planter. He's also works with the North American Mission Board, serving as the city missionary in the city of Baltimore. So welcome, Jamie.
Thank you, Clint. I appreciate it, man. I think you used to be the Sin City missionary, right?
In Baltimore? I did. I was the Sin City missionary in Baltimore. So you're what do they call that? My successor times two
times over? Something like that. Yeah, something like that. I appreciate all the work that you did or did not do while you were here.
So yes. You're gonna make me look like an awful city missionary. I'm confident
plan.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. Okay, so we're talking about executive pastors here, and really, I remember as a young whippersnapper listening to the New Churches Podcast, and you guys would have episodes about stuff like this,
right?
And I would literally think, man, these guys have no idea what it's like to plant a church, because I'm so far away from hiring an executive pastor that they're just completely out of touch with what I'm doing. So Todd, tell us what an executive pastor is and why it's relevant to me.
Okay. So part of the issue, I think, is there are so many different types of number two roles. So executive pastor is a number two role in every way, shape, and form, the way you take that. It is a role that's different despite the church that you're in. And a lot of times in the olden days, that would have been an associate pastor, but we want to polish it up today and call it an executive pastor. But in many of our churches, it's not what you would think of when you think executive pastor, because typically you're going to think administrative or business or the black hand of the pastor who takes care of things. Like, there's so many connotations that come up. But the reality is that role is unique in that it seeks to serve, in my opinion, the senior pastor and the church. So it may be the guy that's carrying out the vision of the senior pastor. He may be a great poet and is a horrible plumber, and so he needs a guy that can come in and do that. Or it may be that he's a great plumber and he needs somebody to, you know, nuance things a little bit better. It's really dependent upon the senior pastor, what you need in that role. So it could be, again, a guy who's great with people, or a guy who's great with numbers, or a guy who's great with execution, or fill in the blank. But the big thing that you need to know as the person who's leading a church is to make sure that you are getting someone by your side, riding shotgun, that kind of covers some of your bases. Usually, it's kind of like a good marriage. There's going to be some overlaps of strengths there. There's going to be some overlaps of the things that you're passionate about and care about, but you're going to be unique enough that you can kind of shoulder to shoulder, side by side, move everything forward. I think the mistake a lot of people make is hiring somebody exactly like them. Yeah. And then that doesn't end up working out over the long term.
Okay. Okay. That's helpful. So the banner over what you're saying, I think, is you're looking for somebody that's going to complement the giftings of the senior pastor. Therefore, the executive pastor may look a little bit different in one situation than it does in another.
Right. Okay. Definitely.
All right. All right. Well, Jamie, you recently brought on an executive pastor, and I think when you and I talked about this, the phrase that you used was game changer, just to talk about how big of an impact that made on the ministry of South Shore Church. So talk to us about your decision to hire an executive pastor, who you got, and what that was all about.
Yeah, man. We started the process of looking in year five. So we had done 5 years without an executive pastor. We had had a couple other staff pieces that were full-time, part-time, half-time. They were worship leader kind of guys. But we'd always had a volunteer administrator who just ran stuff for us. So when we hired an executive pastor, he didn't change my day-to-day roles as much as he changed everybody's church experience. Mm-hmm. He just leveled up every bit of administrative, communication, strategic initiative that we had. Because that's what he did. For us, he was less an administrator and more just the guy who executes the vision across all the board. And it was fantastic. So yeah, he made everything better for us. And we hired him at the beginning of 2019. In the middle of 2019, we merged with a dying Baptist church. At the beginning of 2020, we went through COVID like everybody else. And then we came out of that. So he got hired, fixed everything for the church the way it was, and then it all changed with the merge, and then it all changed with COVID, and then we came back and we recognized that we were an entirely different church, and he built all that again. So in the 3 years we've had him, he has effectively developed three different church strategies for what were three very different church experiences.
Wow. Okay. And your role there has shifted a little bit too, as you've taken on additional responsibilities to help multiply churches in the region. Is that right?
Yeah. I've never done a ton of day-to-day, but I was always responsible for it. So it was sort of just this weight that I had to take care of. Even when we had an administrator, I would have to read the emails to make sure we didn't have to walk anything back, all that kind of stuff. Now I just concentrate almost entirely on preaching and vision. I walk relationship stuff out with my pastors and the interns that we have at the church, which has become the bulk of what I do. But I don't have to put any extra effort into what Kent does, what our executive pastor does. I know him. I trust him. He runs with it. And it is a huge freedom for us.
Yeah. So you mentioned your executive pastor's name, Kent. Tell us about how you met Kent and how you know him.
All right. So I met Kent my senior year of high school. We moved from Indiana to North Carolina the summer between my junior and senior year of high school. went to a new church, and there was this dude named Kent who was helping in the youth group, and he became my friend, and we hung out all the time, and then he started to date my big sister, and they got married. And when I was called into ministry, when I was 18 years old, Kent was like the second person I called and wanted to find out kind of what I could do. And he invited me to a summer camp that year to teach and to listen and to counsel and to do all sorts of stuff. And from that day forward, Kent became, and I wouldn't have used these words at the time, but he became the primary discipler of my ministry. I would not be who I am if he wouldn't have repetitively brought me in and given me chances to preach and to teach and to lovingly correct me and be like, if you say that again, we're all going to get fired. Please don't do that. Stuff like that. And it was just 20 years of that kind of relationship. And then we hired him.
Yeah. I've got to imagine, though, that there's at least in the back of your mind some kind of trepidation about hiring your brother-in-law or some sort of pause. Was there any moment where you were like, this guy's a family member. I don't know if I should do this.
Man, 10 years ago, it would have been, right? Like he and I, because we've done, I mean, we literally did a church camp every year for 20 years. So we were just there together doing the thing. Because of that, I knew him well enough to think that we're going to make it work. So no, it was a pretty easy decision. The hardest thing was to figure out how to do it strategically. Yeah. So it didn't look like nepotism. And we have a plurality of elders and we just let them lead in that, interview them, do all the stuff. And that's how we did it.
Yeah. So your elders obviously became convinced he also had the right skills and was the right guy, regardless of the fact that he was your brother-in-law.
Absolutely. It was unanimous. There were zero questions. Okay, cool. I mean, it was not a quick interview process. Like we didn't shorten it, but it was fast. Like they met him, they became convinced, they prayed about it and stayed convinced, and then they invited him to come.
Okay. So Todd, when you hear that story about hiring a family member, what kind of flags pop up in your mind?
I mean, the biggest flags that pop up in my mind is not everybody is Jamie and Kent. So you have to be extremely mature spiritually in order to handle this. And you assume that most pastors are spiritually mature. And I would say, because there's so much involved. Yeah. It's not only Jamie and his wife, it's also Kent and his wife, if he has one. What I guess he does because he's your brother-in-law. Doing the math there. The big thing there though is like all that dynamic has to work too, guys. Like that's super uber important. The biggest the win is he already knows Jamie. He already knows the decisions Jamie would make and how he would make them, what he would say, all of those things that it takes another person that if he hires off the street may take a year, 2 years to really pick up and understand. They'd have to spend so much time shoulder to shoulder together and go through some tough things and different things. Like that's already been done. So the church gets to the blessing of doing that. However, in most situations, if you've got a guy who's moving across your brother-in-law, who's moving across the country, to be your right hand and nobody knows him, and nobody understand, like you haven't done a really good job of helping people understand, hey, I've worked with this guy for this long. It could really blow up in your face. The maturity of the church is important and how they handle it. Very wise to let the elders come to their own conclusion and not lead the witness too much. All those things I think are absolutely essential.
One thing that comes to mind to Todd's point about not everybody's Jamie and Kent, in my community, there is a church planter who, about 5 years in hired his brother-in-law, in the same role, and it did not go well. And, it led to lots of drama and conflict in the church and conflict in their family. And so I don't think that's necessarily the common story, but it is that story. And I think the thing that comes to mind for me is when you go in with somebody that you know deep, whether it's a relative or somebody else, you have the advantage of knowing them more fully, but the devastation that comes from a conflict or a difficulty is much greater as well. So just be careful, I think, is what I would say if you're going to consider something like that.
Let me tell you too, this isn't the first time I've worked with family. It's just the best time.
Yeah.
Right. So I come from a family of pastors. I'm like six generations. And at some point, my dad's church wanted to hire me to be a youth guy. Yeah. And dad did sort of the same thing and stepped out and brought me in. But my dad and I, though I'd known him my entire life, right? So we had that kind of rapport, obviously. We'd never done ministry together. It was not great. There were moments that were great, right? And the conflict wasn't even between he and I, but there was a bumpiness to trying to figure out, yeah, like, how do I relate to him in ministry? How does he do this? How does he do this? How does the church relate to us? So I would say the reason we hired Kent, in spite of him being my brother-in-law, was the 20 years of ministry experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if you make a friend in seminary that you're really close to and you stay close to and you do this annual like ministry type stuff and you're in each other's lives and you get a chance to bring that dude on, it's like, oh man, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's got the dangers of going bad like family, but there's, yeah, so much water under the bridge. I think if you don't have that, like, I would say don't do it, right? Like, just, yeah, do not do it until you get that water under the bridge.
I think it's important to talk about boundaries here for a second, because I think boundaries have been overemphasized for about, the last couple of decades. I'm a big fan of Henry Cloud. I'm a big fan of a lot of stuff that he does, but I think people use the boundaries language to set up compartmentalize their lives and make places where they can hide and make bad decisions usually. And so the beautiful thing about this again is that, in my opinion, whether it's planting or in regular church, you know, church is life and life is ministry. And it, like, it's just, there's nothing, there shouldn't be a shadow there. Not a shadow. There shouldn't be a separation there when you look at, like, I was in a small group with Jess Thompson, who's been on the podcast, right, before.
Yeah.
Like, we were in a small group together and she worked for me.
Yeah.
People would be like, that's probably not healthy. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but like, I'm the same person everywhere. I don't, right, have a bunch of extra boundaries set up or extra things. My wife knows this person. That's really healthy. Her husband, yeah, knows me. That's really healthy.
Yeah.
All of those things. So I would encourage people too. This is a person that, whether they're a paid person or a volunteer or whatever, you need to do life inside and outside,
right,
the church with this person in order for them to really know you and you to really know them.
Yeah. And in a church planning environment too, Todd, that thing you were just referencing was in a larger church environment. In a church planning environment, you kind of can't help it. I mean, there's no way not to do life. You got to be staying in your house all day, not to do life with the people, because the church plant's usually small and the team's tight knit, and that kind of thing. So, the church I lead has just made the decision to hire an executive pastor a couple of years ago, and we just selected somebody. And so, what advice would the two of you give me about beginning that new hire well? Specifically in that executive pastor role?
I'll go first, man. If you trust him, then give him the freedom to do the job, right? Like, bring a guy on and let him go. There's that fine line of making sure that you've got to be close knit, you've got to do it together, and you've got to make sure it's happening the right way. But nobody wants to get hired and then kind of be led by the hand in this incredibly micromanaging process. So if you bring a guy on to execute at a high level, let him execute, even if it's different.
Yeah.
That's what we had to do, because, I mean, we had done church by ourselves for 6 years. So bringing a guy on, even though he was a friend and I knew him and all that stuff, he just did stuff different. And I had to routinely say, it's good, it's probably better. And I had to just walk myself back from getting involved in things.
Right. That's great advice. Thanks. Todd, anything come to mind?
Yeah, I would say hire that person really slowly, and make sure that there's a culture fit before you pull the trigger. If there, yeah, is any area in which that they are different than you, make sure it's an area that you want to change in your culture. So,
yeah,
if you're like, hey, we have an issue with this, and I want to change that, then that's great if that's part of who he is. If not, don't overlook that. just because it can be trouble for sure down the road. I mean, you know, this is the person who in reality is helping you cultivate the culture of the church, ultimately culture, right. Shared behavior. And we all know the story, strategy, structure, systems, you know, all those things go into it. It's not just what we think it is from the stage. Everything we do between Sundays and outside the sanctuary, all of those things matter a lot. And so you want to make sure that you're in alignment and have somebody that has the exact same culture. If not, you're running a real risk. I would say having a first 90 days plan in place that's really all about him figuring out how the place works before he works on this place is important. In all this, almost like cascading, a cascading view of not necessarily what's important, but what has the most people in it. So like he really, really needs to understand children's. He really, really needs to stand worship. He really needs to understand, you know, all these different ministries, but the big five, especially in how they work.
Yeah. Now, when we were going through the process of deciding to hire, writing a job profile, and then selecting the person, we had in our mind, kind of going outside ourselves. We had like sort of transcendence in mind. We were like, let's get outside of our bubble, you know, and get somebody with some real genuine expertise that's done this on a high level and bring them in. And as we started looking at people, the problem of that was our culture was so distinct and strong inside the church as a church that ministers to military families and it works in network with a bunch of other churches and prioritizes church planting in the way we do. We were just afraid that learning curve for all that stuff would be too steep for somebody. And even if they had all the right, you know, some really great stuff they could bring to us and teach us, that would be too tough. And ultimately we sort of, defaulted back to going with somebody who didn't have that kind of experience. Now they've done executive leadership in the military, but not in our kind of environment, in a church environment. And so we opted to go with somebody who was a member, who was deeply affected by the ministry of our church, who had the skill set in place, the raw materials in place, but really didn't have any experience in church life and ministry. And right now where we sit, we're thinking, okay, that was probably a good move, because it's just to what you said with the cultural piece, like that, you know, it just feels like that is such a hard thing to teach somebody.
Yeah. If you can... meaning, you know, size of your church, location, and just the people that are in it. If you can, it's usually much better to build your executive pastor than buy your executive pastor from somewhere else. Agreed. Even if you've got the finances to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You agree? It's such a great way to do it. Yeah, man. We, when we do any kind of new hire, we do everything we can to bring them on from inside. And to Todd's point, with a 90-day plan, we work really hard to create almost like a 3-month trial. Like, listen, we're going to pay you. We're going to give you a job description. We'll guarantee you like 6 months. But at 3 months, we're going to make a decision like this fit, this worked, or maybe this didn't. And then try to find a way to kind of make it happen. So we do what we can to bring people in slowly. And that's easier to do when you build them, right? Like you can't bring a guy across country and say, we'll try it for 3 months. And if it doesn't work, we'll send you back home.
Right.
But if you're building people up, it works.
Jamie, let's talk about the church planner. You and I both know, and we've worked with them, and it's probably the majority of church planners that just simply does not have the budget to hire an executive pastor, or a number two guy, or a janitor, or you know, a wingman, whatever. They don't have the money to really do anything like that. Is this role, this number two executive pastor kind of role, is there a version, a legitimate version of it in a part-time or volunteer, you know, capacity? Is that possible? How would you advise church planners in that area?
It's definitely possible, but it's possible in the broader picture of what Todd was talking about earlier. There are so many kinds of executive pastors, right? Like depending on where you're located, you can probably find somebody in your church that knows how to work Excel and has a budget. Right. So if you need financial stuff, you can find somebody that's got at least a bit of ability and put them into play. You can give them the training they need. You can find administrators who are good at paperwork or policies, but it depends what you want. So I would say you go in and know where you're weak and then ask people to take on roles. And when we first planted that, I had a guy tell me, don't pick up what's not yours. And I probably took that advice to heart too much. And I would let things be bad as long as they weren't illegal, right? Like as long as nobody was like getting hurt, as long as bad things weren't happening, I was like, ah, it's fine. So if you could see some of our early email communication that went out, it was the worst, right? It was like 6 pages long and small print. Nobody wanted to read it. It was just bad, but we just let it happen. Over time, people get better at those kind of things. So I would say figure out what your gift set is. And in conjunction with that, figure out where you're weak and bring people on who can help you with those weaknesses. And if they don't know how to do it, learn together, right? I've definitely sat with guys at my table and just opened the computer and been like, all right, we're going to have to figure out how to write a kids ministry policy. So I'm going to start Googling and you're going to start Googling and we're going to call some churches and ask for people to send us stuff and then we're going to put it together. And at the end of that, you've got a guy who wrote a policy.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, that's super helpful information. Well, this episode became a little bit of an episode about hiring family members, and that wasn't exactly intended, but hopefully it's edifying and helpful to somebody out there who's worked with and is working with family members. But the idea of providing executive leadership inside of a new church is a critical idea that we do want you to hear. Most church planters, in my observation, are gifted on the vision front. They're bold. They're out there. They're apostolic. They're out trying to expand the ministry all the time, and they often aren't real good at the details and the administration of the church's life and the executive components, even important things like the financial execution and making sure we're taking care of all that we need to do in regards to legal compliance and whatnot. So let me encourage you, if you have not yet done this, to pray that God would provide somebody in your life that, even if you don't have the budget for it, in a volunteer capacity or a part-time capacity, could come and help you be responsible in those areas and serve alongside you in ministry. So thanks so much for listening to the New Churches podcast. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Jamie, for contributing.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.